It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
All right, let's get at it. Let's talk legal. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Cecil. How are you this morning?
We are good. Hope you are as well.
Oh, I'm fine. I feel like I've eaten a lot of chocolate. I'm revved up here and ready to go.
Good morning.
But ready to talk legal. What do we got on tap today, guys?
Well, I think Wes and I are ready to kind of revisit one of the areas of law where we stay so very focused at Harvell & Collins, and that's really the area, the substantive area of law known as elder law. And elder law is a very broad area of the law, and let's kind of begin to dissect it today, and maybe we'll go into more detail next Tuesday. Okay Mike?
Sure. That's fine with me.
And one of the places just to begin is that elder law is the process of kind of looking at your estate and your and what documents, if any, you need in order to be up to date with regard to your estate planning. One of the most crucial documents in any kind of elder law context is the durable power of attorney.
You talked about
that.
That
document that gives an agent the authority to make transfers for you, to create revocable trust for you, to do any kind of Medicaid planning that might come our way in our family. All of that should be detailed in a power of attorney. That's going to be a very critical document. And then the other side of the coin of the estate planning is, of course, to look at the assets, see whether some of these assets possibly it might be prudent to retitle them in a way so as to protect these assets from any kind of long-term care. The third area of elder law, again, being a very broad subject, it is an area known as guardianship, which is an area of law that can sometimes become contested where one family member feels that another is not properly taking care of their loved one. Again, Mike, as you can see, this is a broad area.
Mm-hmm.
But today, let's kind of focus on the documentation that one needs and the objectives that clients have relative to protecting their assets.
So, Mike, you know, one of the primary questions that we get at Harvell & Collins for folks who are getting on up in their retirement years, so to speak, is, you know, what happens if mom or dad or my wife or my husband, you know, ends up having to go into a care facility.
Mm-hmm.
We know that that is very expensive, Mr. Collins, Mr. Harvell. We've heard that there are things that, that can be done to make sure that I don't lose the house, that I can preserve, you know, what I've accumulated. You know, tell me what we can do. So, you know, the question with regard to, you know, skilled nursing care, about it being very expensive, you know, is certainly accurate. I think that 20 years ago, when I started practicing in this area, you know, we were normally seeing $4,500, you know, $4,800, $5,000 a month, something like that,
yep,
as far as your skilled nursing care, expense. And now we're hovering around $7,000, you know, here in year 2020. So it is certainly, the cost of care, just like everything else, has gone up. And folks, a lot of folks just don't really have the means to cover that kind of expense.
Right.
I mean, $7,000 a month expense can knock you out pretty quickly.
Can chew up a nest egg pretty fast.
Right.
Yeah.
So folks have heard about the 3-year look back period and the 5-year look back period and the spend down. And there's a lot of times when clients come in with these type questions, they've heard kind of the word on the street or the word from the neighbor or the word from someone in church. But there's a lot of confusion about what you really can do and what you should do in order to make sure that you're properly postured in the event that one of your loved ones or yourself ends up having to go into one of these very expensive care facilities. So, you know, the process that we go through with our clients is really getting, first of all, an understanding as to the family unit, what their wishes are with regard to where they want their assets to go when they pass away. And then very importantly, we get a very complete understanding, by interviewing the client, talking with the client about what assets we have. You know, do we have a home? Is there a mortgage on the home? Is there any other real property? Is there any savings, stocks, bonds, life insurance, vehicles, you know, kind of going through the general gamut of things that folks accumulate in one's lifetime. And once we have a picture of that, we oftentimes are then communicating with the client about, you know, what their desires are, what their wishes are, what are they wanting to do? Are they wanting to know what is available to them to be able to protect everything they have? Is there a particular situation such as mom or dad being diagnosed with the early onset Alzheimer's? Has someone had a stroke? You know, what is the situation that we're dealing with? And every family situation, Mike, you know, is different. You know, you've got to be able to navigate, you know, the pitfalls.
Yeah, I was, as you were saying this, Wes, every situation is different. Though I think the kind of the overall template as far as Harvell and Collins and the clients is similar in that you're trying to get a needs analysis. You're trying to figure out the whole picture.
Yeah, no
and
doubt.
And everybody's picture is a little, the tiles in the mosaic are a little different, but
right.
You're kind of creating that same picture and then trying to protect the assets or maybe even shelter the assets.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So the triage, kind of situation that mm-hmm. we talked about here in the last minute or so is somewhat similar from client to client, but you know, of course, we've seen all different types of situations in families and dealt with just about everything. So, you know, the big picture with regard to, you know, what assets we have and how they're structured and what we're going to do is most people are very interested in making sure, obviously, if there's a husband and wife, that we don't leave the wife or the husband destitute.
Yeah.
We don't spend all the money and then the surviving spouse doesn't have anything to live on. They're interested in making sure that what they've accumulated over a lifetime that they don't misstep, that they don't fail to recognize what the law allows them to do in order to protect what they have. So that starts with a very keen and full understanding as it relates to Medicaid in many cases. So when we're talking about the cost of care, the $7,000 a month, how do we pay for that? Well, there's really three ways to do it. You know, private pay, you just come out of your pocket
right.
until
you
there's nothing
check.
Left.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term care insurance, which in many cases we have clients who have long-term care insurance on the one hand, but are wanting to do additional planning on the other hand, because in most cases, long-term care insurance is not going to pay everything forever. There's normally going to be a cap on the total amount that will be paid or a per day cap or a per month cap. And, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know if the loved one is going to end up in a care facility for 6 months or for 6 years.
Is there an age range when someone should be thinking about actually purchasing long-term care? I mean, somebody your age, Wes, would you be in the market for that, or somebody who's maybe 20 years your senior?
Well, I'm 47. I don't think that it is bad planning. I don't think it's ill-advised to consider it at my age, 50s, so on and so
okay.
forth, because obviously the older you get, then in many cases, almost every case, the premiums are going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the event that there is a medical condition that develops, then it may be more difficult to become qualified for
yeah.
it. So it kind of to back into your question there, Mike, with regard to that, what I would say is that many times when we get into our 70s, certainly our 80s, it may be too late to even qualify for long-term care insurance.
Gotcha.
Okay. So we just have to be yeah. careful about that. But I would say that as part of a prudent estate plan, starting to look into that in your 50s would be something that I would expect.
Mm-hmm. Let me pause a minute, Mike. This
sure,
is a good little subject to talk about for a moment. This long-term care insurance, and of course the first cousin being life insurance.
Right.
I think that it's important for our listeners to understand that I think that we advise a moderation approach to these two insurance products. It's unfortunate that sometimes when we meet with an insurance agent or even go online and do some internet searching for life insurance and or long-term care insurance, I think there's something about human nature that encourages us to go the full gamut.
Get the gold plan.
What does yeah. it cost in a nursing facility, $8,000 a month. Therefore, I'm going to have $8,000 of LTC, long-term care.
Sure.
How much life insurance do I need? Well, you know, that whole life policy looks real good because it has an investment feature to it. And I'm going to get $1 million of that and stretch myself to pay for a whole life or permanent policy versus, of course, a much cheaper type of life insurance known as a term policy. So what I would like for our listeners to begin to consider is to research these items and consider, depending on what your financial situation is, of course, but to consider taking a bit of a moderation approach. Let's get the right kind of insurance in place for our children, maybe if they're minor or whatever the case might be, to pay off debt if we were to die, for our surviving spouse, whatever the goal might be. But potentially, term policy is just fine,
okay,
which is a whole lot cheaper. Long-term care, you know, better to have something, okay, in place, even though it might not pay for all of the care. It might pay for a significant portion of the care. And also, long-term care will pay for in-home care, which is something we haven't discussed yet, but it's very rare for folks to be able to have any kind of benefit that pays for in-home care. We're talking a lot here about elder law asset protection, but that is for a long-term care stay in a nursing facility.
Sure.
How about care in our home, which long-term care many times has provisions that provide for that. So maybe we get enough long-term care in place that with our savings, with our rental property, combined with the partial payment of a long-term care policy, we have enough to begin to think that we could cover these kinds of expenses if they were to come our way. So I just kind of put that out there. That's a cubbyhole this morning. That's a side story for sure.
Yeah.
But I do want to encourage listeners to think about a moderate approach to buying those kinds of insurance products.
That's an excellent point, mm-hmm. Cecil. I hadn't thought about that, but now I'm going to put that in the mix of things to think about. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more with our Ellen Collins on Let's Talk Legal. We can take your phone calls at 252-247-7282, and we'll be right back. All right. Ring the bell. We're back in law school here with the folks from Harvell and Collins, and we're talking about a very broad subject, a very important subject in elder law. And
right.
Wes, you wanted to add to the conversation.
Yeah, Cecil, you know, as I was talking or mentioned about long-term care insurance, Cecil appropriately brought up the issue of, you know, when we discuss insurance issues, and maybe we need to do a whole nother program about this.
Probably.
This is kind of a sideshow on this elder law topic, asset protection topic. But nevertheless, he appropriately commented that it's wise to think in moderation mm-hmm. as it relates to some aspects dealing with insurance. And just to kind of wrap up that side conversation, you know, we don't want to end up drowning in premiums.
Right.
That we can't afford,
but think we
just
need
to make sure we've got all the long-term care insurance in the world to take care of whatever may happen. Well, it is appropriate to do that cost-benefit analysis, to make a determination based on our particular financial situation, what our expenses are, what our budget looks like, you know, what we can afford when we're looking at long-term care insurance. So, yeah, moderation would be something that would certainly be taken into consideration.
Let me ask you a question, Wes, because when people that may be just listening to the show for the first time, they haven't really had much interaction with attorneys and law
right.
offices. When they come in for a sit down with you, they're doing basically a needs analysis.
Right.
I mean, you're just talking about insurance. You're a lawyer. You know, you're a student of the law,
right.
but you can still guide clients through accounting issues or give them advice, direction, as well as insurance. Is this all what's available at Harvell and Collins when someone comes in?
Well,
for
you know, you bring up accounting. That's excellent. We do have a tax attorney, Andrew Foster, who is on
life
the program Thursday,
yeah, Thursday,
and he's great. We deal with all of these issues.
Okay.
However, in the event we get into an area where we feel it's appropriate to have an accountant involved, then certainly we'll make referrals. We'll talk about who is your accountant. You need to discuss this particular issue with your accountant, because we really don't do, you know, tax returns
sure.
so much. But yes.
But you're giving legal counsel. So all of that kind
it's all encompassing.
Under that umbrella.
I kind of see us as the quarterback, you know.
Okay. That's a good analogy.
We are meeting with the client. We're identifying the issues. We're trained to do that as attorneys. We're educated on how to deal with these things.
Yeah.
Not only are we educated on how to deal with these things, we have lots of experience in dealing with these different items, because this is, you know, what we do on a daily basis. My goodness, 5 days a week, sometimes seven.
So you're giving your clients a good game plan, basically.
Right. So we're kind of quarterbacking the situation.
Okay.
And sometimes the team members we have to bring in, you
special
know,
teams.
Maybe a CPA, maybe insurance related things, those type things.
Okay.
But I think back to that, you know, when a client comes in, it does need to be, you know, kind of understood. You know, sometimes you've got the going to see attorney thing is somewhat nerve wracking
sure.
for some folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to make it very low key. These are important issues, but obviously when the family members come in, you sit down and talk with them, or the mom and pop or whatever it may be. There's no expense for that. We're just talking, getting the information.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yep.
Getting the baseline documentation, our notes, and then giving advice, and then talking about what we think needs to be done, what we advise, and what the expense is, and then the client, what the cost would be, and then the client would then totally have the opportunity to make a decision to do some or all or none of what we advise. So that's kind of the way that works. That's the process, kind of
okay.
answer your question.
Yeah, that's great.
So, you know, we've
you.
Only got like 8 or 9 minutes left, and
go
we
ahead.
Can talk for
this
eight,
is a big
eight or 9 weeks about
yeah,
this
we may
topic.
Just do that. Yeah.
But, and there will be multiple more programs about this. So those listening who are interested in the twists and turns of Medicaid, the twists and turns of protecting assets,
yep.
what the law allows you to do, then certainly, tune in next week and the following week, or listen to us on our website, harvellandcollins.com. You can go, listen to our old shows there.
Yeah. Good.
So, but at any rate, you know, kind of back to this issue of, you know, what if our loved one ends up in a nursing home? And during the break, this was interesting. You made the comment I've heard so many times over the years.
Not alone.
Well, my loved one, you know, she doesn't ever want to go into a care facility. Who does? Nobody does.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my mother.
And I'll make sure that she doesn't. And my response to you on that was heard that many times before, but what we see, I would say at least half of folks who do end up in a skilled nursing facility are individuals who have had a health issue, or even it could be something that is acute, like a stroke, like a slip and fall and a broken bone,
sure.
a car accident, or it could be something that is not so acute, more chronic, like a Alzheimer's, that type of thing. I even had clients who have had certain types of cancer where they, you know, live for a long time, but they need a high level of care.
Yeah. Yep.
And then the individual ends up going into the hospital, and then the hospital, when they discharge the individual, they're discharged to a skilled nursing facility, because that's where their Medicare period of rehab is allowed.
Been there. Yeah.
So then, unfortunately, probably about, I don't know how high the percentage is, but it might again be 50% of those folks who do end up under that Medicare window, maybe a little lower percentage, don't rehab to the point where they're able to go back home. So they end up staying in the care facility
until the end.
So again, we just don't have that choice about, are we going to be home? Are we going to have to go into a care facility, into the hospital? In all circumstances, sometimes
right.
we do, but sometimes we don't. So the planning we're talking about to make sure that we structure our assets appropriately is, you know, planning for that kind of high percentage likelihood that
it's probably, you know, going to happen.
It's going to happen at some point in time, and
yeah.
we know how much it costs.
Yeah.
That's kind of the big picture with regard to that.
Yeah. It's a big topic. It's an important topic.
Well, we're right here on this topic. And I think it's also just important to reiterate, Mike, skilled care can be what is medically necessary. None of us want to see our loved one in a skilled care facility. We all want to be in our home, and we all want our family, our close friends, you know, potentially professional help in the home. Everyone's goal is that. But if our physicians are of the opinion that our care it can be compromised in the home, and that it's medically necessary that we have skilled care, because skilled care is very specifically defined in our medical community as what it happens to be.
Sure.
And if it's medically necessary that we have skilled care, then, you know, Mike, we're going to have to be in a skilled care facility. And if we're not, then we're going to be, quite frankly, violating the law relative to our loved one because of the Adult Protective Services, Department of Social Services,
sure,
that is charged mm-hmm. with making sure that our adults in our community are properly cared for, and that there is not elder abuse, or that this patient or this loved one is not, you know, in a compromising position relative to their health in the home. So, and they are very active, I might add. I'm speaking about the Department
and
of Social Services,
absolutely,
the Adult Protective Services, and absolutely it
yeah.
is a good thing.
Yeah.
And they are quite active. They're overworked, okay, and they will tell us underpaid, and I'm not going to get into that, but I can tell you one thing. I know they work hard,
yeah,
and I know that they are very competent. And so the point here is that even though we do not want our loved one, our desire is not to have our loved one in a skilled care facility, medical circumstances can dictate otherwise.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not always what we want. It's just we have to abide by the law. So, like you said at the outset of this this topic, elder law, it's a very big, broad subject, and something that we'll be talking about in future shows, I'm sure. And it's something
sure.
that listeners should really take heed. I mean, I'm 58 years old. You're hitting home with this, Wes.
Right,
me.
Right.
We'll be right back after this quick break with the final moment of Harbell and Collins. Let's Talk Legal. Stay tuned. Hey, in the few moments we have left here with Harvell and Collins, let me throw out the phone number. If you want to talk to Harvell and Collins after the show, call the office at 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com for more information. Great subject today, guys, elder law.
Yeah, just a couple minutes left, so maybe
yeah.
we'll give just a kind of a thumbnail sketch
sure.
outline of what we'll talk about next week. And
good.
That's kind of where the rubber hits the road, which is, all right, what do you do,
now Harvell? What
do you do, Collins, in order
yeah.
to structure this? Well, Cecil mentioned, first of all, the durable power of attorney. That's vitally important for folks who don't have that, because in the event we do have a loved one who has a serious health issue to the point where they can't sign documents, and we have assets that we need to structure in a way in order to properly, you know, hold on to those, then we can't do that unless we have the power of attorney. So folks need to have that. We'll talk a little bit about that
okay,
next
good,
week.
Good.
Big picture is, you can't have over $2,000 of countable assets and be eligible for Medicaid. Now, countable assets is a moving target.
We'll need to talk about that.
Lots of things we
yeah.
can do to protect the home, other real property, our savings, without having to deal with the look-back period, which is now 5 years.
5 years.
So we'll talk about those details next week. We'll talk about the big picture next week about how that works. And then get into the process of, once we set that up, you know, making application.